It had been 14 years since I had been to church. The year was 1994. And when I put my hand on the door of the church and pulled it open, the tears started to fall from my eyes. I suddenly couldn't walk very well. I was very, very disappointed to see that other people were in the church. See, there was quite a long line for the priest to hear my confession. And I had counted on being able to cross that threshold, go immediately into the priest's office and dump everything that I needed to say. But I had to wait. And so as I sat in that pew, I started to unravel with all the thoughts of all the things I had done, and the state of mind that I had was, well, not very good. And the longer I sat there, the more the tears started to come until there was a constant flow. And I also have that really unfortunate characteristic of being the person whose nose starts to run when you start to cry. And so I very quickly went through my tissues, and I was looking and waiting, and I was a mess. See, I had broken every commandment. No, I didn't break any laws, but I had broken every commandment, and I knew it. And I had been blaming everybody else for how my life was going, particularly the one that I had been married to. He was like enemy number one, right? It was all his fault. But over the course of some time, I had started to see my part in it, and I had started to see that while I had kept the letter of the civil law, I had kept the spirit of me first. And as I sat there, I was running over the most prominently broken things at the time, namely, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt honor thy father and mother, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. We might as well throw in, don't take the Lord of your God in vain. Don't use that as a curse word. We could throw that in there too. And don't covet your neighbor's stuff, particularly not their spouse. But the longer I sat there, the more I started to remember that every other commandment could be listed there too, because after all, it was me first. The man who lived in the tombs was like that. Me first. Me first for so long that he was driven crazy. You know, me first can drive you crazy. The first thing that it does is it drives you into being right about everything. And if you give that enough time, it drives you into solitude, because you're more right than everyone, even the people that love you. And this guy had been doing that for so long that not only was he right about everything, he was alone. And not only was he alone, he was naked. He was crazy. And he stands for us as a model of what happens to us when we live me first, when all that's good for us is the letter of the civil law, but not the letter and the spirit of God's law. And for every decent human being who still has a spark of that God light with which they were created within them, a glow, there comes a moment when you confront that you've been living me first. And for that guy, we can be assured that spark was tiny. Chains couldn't hold him. Guarding did no good. Clothes were worthless. He had no home. He was alone, completely separated from community. And when he saw Jesus, that was the moment of reckoning. I'm imagining all the commandments flooding back. Known or not, commandments are the basis of human life. So when he saw Jesus, he threw himself at Jesus' feet. He recognized right away this was going to be trouble. Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm being right about everything, the very thing I hate the most is when someone brings the facts and says, no, see right here? And I'm confronted with, I can't hold on to right anymore, and even the print tells me I'm wrong, and now I got to admit it to everybody who's looking at me. In fact, this happened to me just last night. It's not that fun. But the more you confront your rightness, the less painful that becomes. Those moments when we're faced with the one who is truth and life and the way, the moment when Jesus sheds light on stuff, I like to call them like, oh, right? Oh, and it actually can get funny. Oh, is that what I was doing? Oh, sorry. But in that first painful moment, that stepping into the light and the truth and the way, it's a painful severing of everything that we've been holding on to. And so the demons beg him, do not send us into the abyss. Can you please send us into those pigs? Here's what I love most about Jesus. Okay, go into the pigs. And then he drives the pigs into the abyss. Right? See, this is what Jesus does with everything that doesn't belong in us. All that sinfulness, those ways that we see things that we think are right. By the way, I'm going to call those judgment. All of our judgments, our opinions, our assessments, the things we hold on to. That's what Jesus wants to do with it. To drive it out of us and into the abyss. And when he did it for that man, suddenly he was clothed again, restored to sanity, in his right mind. He could see things for what they actually were. And of course, like any human being to whom that would happen, he wanted to cling to Jesus. Wherever you are, let me go. Don't leave me here with those people that are mad at you and afraid of you. Now we have to imagine the conversation here. Jesus turned to him and said, you've made a huge mess. Not letting you escape from that. Go clean that up. And while you're cleaning it up, tell them everything God has done for you. And so he went and told everyone what Jesus had done. I was sitting there, a weeping puddle of a mess, and finally the priest's door opened, and it was my turn. Somehow I got into that room, and I was really disappointed that the days of the Catholic Church had changed, because when I was growing up, there was a box, and the priest was in a box, and there were boxes on either side, and I could open the door and go into my box, and there was a screen between us so that we couldn't see each other. I wanted that. But when I went into the room, there were two chairs facing each other. And I sat in the chair, and the moment had come. This was the moment where I could be like the prosecuting attorney of my life and tell him everything that I had done, and he could be the judge who knew the law and then tell me what my punishment was. And that was how I entered the room. I was ready to take it. And I started my litany of offenses. And he sat like a judge and let me talk. And I cried. I was a weeping puddle of a mess as I went through 14 years. Everything I could think of. Because see, I wanted to leave that place ready to do my work so that I could get on with it. I was ready to take my part in it, and I was ready to take the blame and the punishment for everything I had done, and I was expecting him to tell me, here's what the law says, and here's what you did, so now here's what you have to do to make up for that. Prosecuting attorney and judge. But instead, what I found was prosecuting attorney, defense attorney. For everything I said, he had a counterpoint of grace. For every broken law, he had an amendment. For every tear and snot running nose, he had a tissue. And in the end, he turned to me and he said, I'm not your judge. Your judge died for this. For this. Your judge died so that you could be unbound and unshackled by that crap you've been carrying around, by the demons that live in the abyss between your ears and tell you you are worthless. Whatever it is that you have to say to prosecute yourself, it is forgotten. It was, in fact, forgiven the moment that you did it. You just didn't know. And it's the not knowing that has been killing you. We live in ignorance, distrust, in the real world with nefarious characters, all sorts of disaster, and disasters we bring upon ourselves, and we carry it around in the abyss of our minds as if that has the final word. You have no prosecuting attorney. You have a defense attorney and a judge who's waiting to set you free. This text is interesting to me in the Gospel of Luke because Jesus is teaching his disciples. Right before this, he says to them, "No one, after lighting a lamp, hides it under a jar or puts it under a bed, but puts it on a lampstand so that those who enter might see the light." And then he calms a storm, casts out 2,000 demons, brings a little girl back to life, and heals a woman who's been bleeding for 12 years. Two pages. Luke chapter 8. And then he calls his disciples together and he gives them power and authority over all the demons and to cure diseases. And he sends them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal. And he says to them, you don't need anything but your own experience. You go now and be a light on a lampstand. Go to your family. Go to your neighbors. Go to your city. Go to your country and to your world and proclaim to them everything that God has done for for you.